Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is brought to you by High Echelon. High Echelon PC is a nationwide CPA firm based in Atlanta focused on a great client experience. High Echelon provides top quality work with total transparency so clients always know exactly what they're getting. They believe accounting doesn't need to be complicated and that clients should get the experience they deserve, which includes top-notch accounting, tax, and payroll services, timely communication, complete data flow, and the best automation security. Book a call or drop them a line on their website, highecheloncpa.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Blue Pineapple Travel. Blue Pineapple Travel is an agency of experienced travel advisors who help you design the perfect trip. Blue Pineapple Travel advisors are all well-traveled and knowledgeable, and they will be your advocates from start to finish. They love to help people plan their travel, whether it's for a race, a family trip, a weekend getaway, or the trip of a lifetime. Their goal is to match you with the trip that you want. Relaxation or adventure, traveling solo or with a group, inside the U.S. or abroad, Blue Pineapple Travel can plan exactly the trip that you want. Find them online at BluePineappleTravel.com and see some of the great places that folks who have worked with Blue Pineapple Travel go on their Instagram, at Blue Pineapple Travel. MPE Coaching is the coaching arm of the podcast. If you like what you hear here and you need help preparing for a big goal, reach out to us at PleasantPodcast@gmail.com or MPEcoach@gmail.com. Trail races, marathons, triathlons, multi-day relays, we have helped people get ready for all of these things. Our approach is rooted in proven exercise physiology, but we also bring our own experience as coaches and athletes to bear. We specialize in helping adults with busy schedules find ways to build fitness and accomplish their goals. Whether you're looking to complete your first multi-sport race, qualify for Boston or Kona, set a new marathon PR, or simply become a healthier, happier athlete, we can help. Click on the coaching link on the podcast website, www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Elemental Altitude Training Center. Elemental Altitude is Atlanta's only altitude training facility. At Elemental Altitude state-of-the-art indoor training center, they are capable of simulating elevation of up to 24,000 feet. Training in the thinner air and lack of oxygen prompts an increase in red blood cells, meaning that more oxygen can be delivered to your working muscles on race day. Athletes undertaking all sorts of goals, from rugged mountain climbs to flat sea level marathons to Ironman triathlons, train in the hypoxic environment created at Elemental Altitude. I trained there several times ahead of my successful race at the London Marathon in 2022. And Michelle trained there extensively for the Silver Rush 50 in 2023, her first ever 50-mile race that spent a lot of time over 10,000 feet. In addition, Elemental Altitude hosts a variety of physiological testing, such as sweat testing, blood lactate testing, VO2 max testing, and a variety of metabolic testing, which can tell you your resting metabolic rate and the types and amounts of fuels you are burning at different training and racing intensities. Drop them a line at info@elementalaltitude.com if you have questions or to set up an appointment. Their website is elementalaltitude.com. And finally, our new sponsor for 2024 is Bright Hair. Bright Hair is a creative design studio offering branding, graphic design, marketing, and website design and support. They designed our Most Pleasant Exhaustion logo, and they are helping to build our website right now. The folks at Bright Hair are patient and thorough, and they listen to your feedback. Their expertise has been critical to our getting our branded merchandise shop off the ground in early 2024. Be sure to reach out to them with any graphic design or marketing needs that you have. You can find them at brighthair.com. That's bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, hair, H-A-R-E.com, or on Instagram at bright.hair. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast possible. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast, brought to you by Bright Hair, High Echelon PC, Blue Pineapple Travel, MPE Coaching, and Elemental Altitude Training Center. My name is George Darden. I'm an endurance athlete and coach in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm the father of twin, now 10-year-old boys, and a college professor.
I'm Michelle Frank. I'm also an endurance athlete in Atlanta, Georgia, mom to three girls, and a CPA.
My son's turned 10 2 days ago on March 27th, which is, of course, the reason why I was accentuating that. And they had a very happy birthday. Double digits, right?
Yeah, that's big.
So, very good. Your youngest is still 9, right?
Yes, and it turns out, unbeknownst to me, Alana's birthday parties are what everybody in her class looks forward to every year. So I feel pressure because the birthday's in May, and I always just kind of think about getting through a big work season and then the Passover holiday and then her birthday. But her friends have actually, a few of them who are here quite often, have already started asking what the plans are. So I was caught a bit off guard by that. My
You have
big
set a
kids,
standard and you didn't realize you had set
holy cow, I
the
know. My big kids actually, we had a friend come do fairy hair last year, which I had never heard of it, but apparently everybody else had. So my big
standard.
girls, my 15 and going to be 18-year-old before this party, have requested that we have fairy hair again. Besides buying her a horse and like setting it up in the front yard, I'm not sure how to, make her happy, but we're gonna do our best. So,
I
yeah.
do not suggest the buying of a horse and setting it up in the front yard, but hey, you do
No
you.
kidding.
So you do what works, by all means.
So.
Eric is not with us today. He had some late adds to his schedule here on this Friday, the 29th, and so he wasn't able to be with us, which is too bad. We always make fun of Eric about sucking up to his wife and talking about how he's the husband to a beautiful wife, Michelle. Turns out that not all podcasters are faithful to their romantic partners. And so, maybe we shouldn't have been making fun of Eric about that.
Or five or six of them, do you mean?
So yeah, something like that, something like that. So we're going to let that situation shake out a little bit more before we actually comment on it here on our podcast. But if you haven't
Okay,
seen
but
what's going on, by all means, check out the New York Magazine article about Andrew Huberman.
just at first glance, like no surprise, right? Like, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I like I said, I'll be interested to see how it shakes out. But it is very striking and very interesting that someone who has built his brand on health, engaging in lots of very emotionally and physically unhealthy behaviors. And so, do with that what you will. But like I said,
Yeah.
we'll see how it shakes out. And perhaps we'll end up talking about it sometime over the course of the next couple of months. Speaking of big news, have you listened to Beyonce's album yet? It just came out this morning.
So literally like 3 hours ago today. I mean, I did listen to the brand new there's a brand new podcast on trail stuff on I listened to three of those episodes this morning, just
Okay,
finished the
that's
third
not the
one.
same thing, just to be
But
clear.
what I'm trying to explain is when I open Spotify, it's not Beyonce coming at me. It's like you have new podcast episodes. So I missed that Beyonce had a new album today, but I will go listen right after we podcast. But what do you think? Because I feel fairly certain you listened to
So
it.
I actually have not listened to it yet. I've been running from place to place this morning. I got up and had 1 hour and 15 minutes on the bike this morning. Then I had to go to the gym. But I do have an appointment, a massage therapy appointment, that I have to drive to in just a little while. And so I'm going to listen to it on the way there. It's 27 tracks long. There are cameos from Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton. There's a cover of a Beatles song on there. A lot of folks have said, is this a country album? She says, no, it's not a country album, it's a Beyonce album. It is called Cowboy Carter, for what that's worth. But yeah, I'll look forward to listening to her bend a few genres here over the course of the next 24 hours or so. And speaking of things that are coming up or things that are coming out, the Tour of Flanders, my favorite bike race, is this weekend. It's on Easter Sunday on the 31st. Are you excited about that, Michelle?
I just want to know if you're going to be taking Flemish gels this weekend. So,
I
like
do
this is
not plan to try out. I actually read the article on Global Cycling Network about the beef stew and fries gel that was released as a promotional item by the Taste of Flanders, which is like a tourism company there in Belgium. And the gel actually mimics the taste of the de facto national dish of Belgium, beef stew and fries.
this is a real product. It's not just like photoshopped into this article.
It's
Like
a
this
it's a
actually
yeah,
exists.
it actually exists. No, I had the same thought. I was like, that's weird because Goo always does this on April 1st, right? Which is only a couple of days
Yeah,
away. Goo always says, oh, we're gonna try to have some new savory flavors here, and they're always
absurd.
fake, right? It's like, you know, mushroom and liver and stuff like that. But no, they actually created a product. It's not for sale. And so if I wanted to order some and get some, I couldn't get some, but they pass it out as a promotional product to the press and maybe to some people along the course and maybe those who buy tickets in the VIP tent or something else like that. But the guys from Global Cycling Network who actually tasted it, they said first they actually went into a restaurant in Belgium and ordered the beef stew and fries. And after they had had a few bites of it, they said, okay, now let's eat the gel and see if the gel compares. And they were like, it's not even close, no comparison. But they decided that was unfair. And so a week later, one of the authors actually went out on a bike ride. And halfway through the bike ride, he pauses at the top of a hill, takes the gel, and he said, it's not bad. In terms of mimicking the flavor of beef stew and Belgian fries.
Have you ever been on a really long bike ride after a really hard climb and been craving beef stew?
No, not
Okay.
once.
Just making sure. Because not a cyclist here, but at least in a level of exertion that I think can be a shared experience between
Never,
most endurance
ever,
athletes.
ever
Nobody
have I
eats
wanted
beef
that.
stew.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Oh, man.
But we'll see. I listened to a podcast yesterday about nutrition during the Comrades course. And so, of course, I've been thinking a lot about that. As I've said on the podcast, I've been thinking in more practical terms about what I'm actually going to be doing during Comrades since it's now only 10 weeks away. And so socks has been my preoccupation over the course of the past couple of days. But then also nutrition in terms of what I'm going to carry with me and what I'm going to take on course and all that sort of thing. So I've been
What
thinking
did
a
the
lot about those
podcast
recently.
say?
So the podcast talked about just calorie levels, essentially. And it didn't really talk a whole lot about literal logistics of it, like how to carry all the stuff that you need to carry for a 54-mile race. And I'm actually more concerned about the logistics of it than anything else. I think in the end, my nutrition strategy is going to be fairly simple.
And what does that mean?
And it's going to be just kind of similar to what it would be at a marathon, except for, you know, an extra 3 hours. And so I'm going to kind of continue the gels and water, which is what I normally do in a marathon. I'll probably take some Coca-Cola along the way. I will certainly grab a salted potato at some point along the way, because that's kind of a comrade's tradition, and I feel obliged to consume some of that as part of the comrade's experience. But yeah, I think it's going to be largely a gel and water day.
And how often are there hydration stations along that?
Often. Yeah.
Often.
They're a
Okay.
lot. Yeah. They're fairly common. So every 2 miles, roughly.
So are most people wearing there?
No, very few people are.
Right. Yeah, I know. I
Yeah.
don't feel like this race is not synonymous with like hydration vests and stuff
Right,
like that.
right.
So.
No, definitely not. Very few people wear vests and anything like that. And I don't love wearing a vest. And so I imagine that I'm probably not going to be wearing one either. But I'm still trying to work it out, essentially. I mean, it's overall a challenge unlike anything I've kind of faced before, you know?
Sure.
And so that's requiring me here as we march towards it to really rethink a lot of various things that I do and test out lots of different gear and lots of different strategies and stuff like that. Which for one thing makes it more expensive. you know, just let me buy six different pairs of socks from six different manufacturers to try and figure out which one actually holds up over the course of a 54-mile race on asphalt. But also just trying to figure out how to logistically make it all work, you know.
I always think with these types of races that the logistics of everything needed to experience and complete the run is far more stressful than doing the actual running itself.
I think it's kind of fun too, though. Do you know what I mean?
Well, sure. When you go to REI every other day, it's fun.
I've only been once, but I will be going
this
again
month.
To make a return. But no, I do have fun, you know, testing out the various things, and I'm still far enough out now to where I feel like I'm going to get it figured out. And so, but yeah, I have figured out the formula for success as far as fueling and logistics in a marathon. I figured that out, right? But this is more than twice the distance of a marathon. It's obviously a much different beast. And so I'm kind of working all those things out now, but I have plenty of opportunities between now and then to actually work it out. I got to test some of my gear last weekend in a 50K called the Cove 50K up in North Georgia, in between Somerville, Georgia and Chickamauga, Georgia, basically. I had mentioned it on the podcast last week. It is in a place where I'd ridden my bike a lot. Not on the trails where the race was, but just sort of in the general area. The start and finish line was at a place that was formerly a rest stop in the Chattooga Century, which is my favorite century in the state of Georgia. Fittingly enough, one of the reasons why I like the Chattooga Century, the charity bike ride, is because I felt like it had a little bit of everything. It had some small towns, it had a climb, it had small country roads. And this actually, I would describe the same way, this race. It had a little bit of everything. It had a lot of runnable sections. It had some dirt road. It had some fire paths. It had some wide, well-groomed trails. It had short, steep, muddy climbs. It had long, extended climbs. It had some real technical sections. It had boulders. It had streams crossings. It had a waterfall.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of blown away by how understated a lot of the marketing had been, and then how kind of awesome the course was. And I was talking to the race director about it, and we went through tunnels. There were three tunnels that we literally went through.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, it was totally cool. But I was talking to the race director about it afterwards, and he said, yeah, we didn't really put a lot into marketing because it's a first year race. And we wanted to have some people come and do it, but we figured if we had like a really big crowd and we were trying to manage a really big crowd, that would be a little bit overwhelming for the first year race.
Makes sense.
And so, so they didn't really market it a whole lot. They kind of kept it low key, sort of spread the word in the trail running community in and around Chattanooga, which is where a lot of people came from. And I happened to find an ultra sign up, and did it. But yeah, it was a great race. I was super impressed with the race direction, with the course, with the volunteers, with everything. So
did you feel
fun.
Prepared for it? Like not just the distance, but I mean, because you've done the approach to the AT. I mean, you've done some kind of funky stuff lately. So
yeah, I've done a lot of doubles, a lot of stacks, not doubles. Like where I run a long run one day, then come back and run another long run the next day. I've done a lot of that sort of thing. Yeah, actually, I felt better in the back half of this race than I felt in the back half of most ultra marathons I've ever run. And there was this long kind of gradual downhill section in the mid 20s that I just flew through that section and I felt like a million bucks. And yeah, it was great. There was a very steep descent toward the end. And it had been the very steep ascent at the beginning. And then it finished on this flat country road that went through a couple of fields. And my quads got pretty trashed by that final real steep descent after, 30 miles of running. And then we had this flat mile on the road. And one of the things that I really took away from the race is that I was still able to run pretty well and pretty efficiently and pretty quickly over the course of that last mile, even though I was kind of done pushing at that point. I wouldn't go so far as to say I was jogging it in, but I kept it comfortable over the course of that last mile, and still ran under 7 minutes for that last flat mile. And so that to me was very bolstering, to think about that I'm still able to run very comfortably that speed with that much fatigue in my legs,
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was a huge takeaway from the race for me.
I mean, I feel like a lot of that could just be attributed to how you've been training for the last 3 or 4 months, right? Like you've done a proper base phase and worked on all those weaknesses and then
for sure
done the running work.
Yeah, for sure.
And you're not injured.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, no, right.
All...
Yeah. Imagine this. You train smart and things tend to go well. Yeah. Right. But no, you're totally right about that. I had three really rock solid weeks, and then this was the final race of the at the end of those 3 weeks, And then this week that's coming to an end now has been a little bit more of a recovery week, which worked out well. And so I took a couple of days and really recovered from the 50K race, from the Cove 50K. And like my ankles were swollen and stuff like that, you know, and so all that stuff had to go down. And ultimately it did. And then around midweek, I kind of started ramping it back up. And then today, Friday, was pretty close to what a normal Friday would be. And then over the weekend, I'm doing, you know, an hour on the bike, then an hour run tomorrow, Saturday. And then Sunday, I have a 2-hour run. And so kind of back to normal almost over the weekend. And then I have that big Western North Carolina weekend next weekend. So
sounds like the Co 50K should be on our calendars for next year. Is there any, do they plan to do it again?
They do plan to do it again. Yeah. The guy who was the race director, he's a school principal. And he normally had been a school principal actually in Cobb County, where you and I are both from. He was at Lost Mountain Middle School, then at McEachern High School. And then he moved up to Northwestern Georgia and started running in this area that he made into this course. And he said that he noticed when he would upload to Strava that there were no Strava segments on it. And he was like, nobody runs here. That's weird. And so he decided to sponsor a race and bring people to the area to kind of showcase the space, which I think is great. And so, yeah, he's a school principal by day. And then introduced and directed this race. But I was kind of stalking him a little bit afterwards. He's run Mountain Mist the past couple of years, including the year that three of us ran it. And he finished about 5 minutes in front of Eric.
So,
that's kind of the level runner he is. And certainly an experienced ultra runner, obviously, as well. But yeah, he did a great job. The course was really well marked. There was one place where there should have been a sign and there wasn't, and that happens to be the one place where I took a wrong turn.
Why do you always do that? You never choose the correct way, do you?
Okay, this is actually, it sometimes feels that way. But there was actually a good reason for this. So the flags, for the most part, were on the right. And so I was following these flags, and there was one on the right that kind of looked as if it was going off to the right, and we were supposed to turn left at this T-stop on this road. And I was like, well, that flag was just kind of on the right, and I kind of feel like it's pulling me right, so I turned right. But the course was so well marked that I ran a quarter mile, and I was like, I haven't seen a flag, and I don't see one out in front of me.
So you knew right away.
I was like, no, there would have been a flag by now.
Yeah.
And so I didn't end up running 2 miles off course before I turned around and came back or something like that. Right.
Right.
And so turned around, came back, ran the other direction, found the flag. And then interestingly enough, maybe a mile later, there was a left turn and there were two signs at the left turn a mile later. And I was like, one of those signs was supposed to be
the other way
back at that T-stop where I took a wrong turn. So clearly there's a little miscommunication there. It actually turned out well. I think it made the race a little bit better. I had moved into the lead in the first 5 or 6 miles, and that wrong turn was at about 11 miles. And so while I was off course, the two guys that were in second and third actually passed me and got out in front of me. And I found that out just before the second big, huge climb in the real technical section at about 17 is when I found that out at a rest stop. And that was bolstering. It was like, all right, I'm chasing somebody now. Let me see if I can catch these guys. And they came into sight at about 20. It took me about a mile to catch them. And then when I passed them and kind of got out in front of them, and then we started going down around the mid 20s. And I said I was really, really flying at that point. I was in part because I was thinking, okay, let me try and get away from these people. Let me try and put some space in there. Right. And so it definitely, you know, shaped the race and made the race more exciting for me as it turned out. So that was pretty cool too. So I'm not even mad about the wrong turn.
What shoes did you wear?
So I wore the Saucony Endorphin Edge. So good question. You and I and Eric have talked and sang the praises of the Endorphin Edge, which is now discontinued.
So sad.
I know. But when they first discontinued it, I bought a new pair then. Or when they first announced it was going to be discontinued, I bought a new pair. And so this is not the same pair that I wore for Mountain Mist last year. I had worn the old pair, the black pair, for a year or so. And obviously not for every run. And then I just started wearing the new pair, this month, early March. And so this was a fairly new pair of Endorphin edges that were white before I started the race.
And they're probably not
And
white anymore.
they are now a lovely shade of brown, six creek crossings later. But yeah, they were great as they always are. My feet were really hurting towards the end, but I actually am blaming that on the socks. And so that's the reason why I said I'm sort of focused on socks this week, trying to figure out what my socks are going to be for Comrades, because I don't think I chose the right socks for this particular race. Trying to find
a
balance between
a pair
compression.
Of socks?
So, well, compression, right? That's exactly what I was about to say. Compression and cushioning, those two things don't tend to go together. Like,
yeah,
the socks either tend to be cushioned or they tend to be compressive. And so I was wearing a less cushioned, compressive pair of socks. And I want something that's more cushioned, but also has compression. So, like, this week I tested out a pair of socks that was more cushioned, but had, like, no compression.
No compression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So trying to figure that out is tough.
I ended up returning the running warehouse, gave me a full credit on the Elite Fours. So now I have this huge credit sitting there. So I decided to just go all
the
in
New
on,
Balance shoes that you actually ran in Shamrock?
Yeah, because every day I look down and I see my black, both my second toes, and it's a little disappointing.
Yeah, fair.
and I just don't really have a need for like a $250 carbon plated marathon racing shoe right now. And you know, based on their return policy, it was nothing. It was very obvious that they were worn and they were fine to just give me a full credit. But I also just am sort of in the sock. I felt like I wore Stance socks for years. But they've all just really worn out now. So I ordered like $150 pair of socks.
All right.
Just like a ton of socks, because I have this credit and I don't need any shoes right now, like none.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited. But yeah, I think a little bit of cushion and arch support is, I would say arch compression is really important, but then finding a pair that doesn't just like kind of like hang on your foot, it's pretty tough. I don't know. And also,
we'll
I
see.
don't like if it's like itchy, if the material is too polyester-y.
See,
so.
and it's funny you say itchy, because like a lot of socks that are made for longer stuff are made from wool, and wool, like even the word feels itchy to me.
That's so interesting. I love the soft merino wool sock.
Yeah.
But
maybe I mean, wool to me just connotes itchiness and warmth. And I just can't imagine wearing that in a sock for a 54-mile race on the roads in the sun.
I mean, I know I've mentioned it here, but I think the Swiftwick Flight XT is a wool-based sock, and it is not. I mean, my feet breathe better in wool than just about anything else. So that might be the missing link for you. You
It
might
might
need
be.
to.
Yeah. It might be. I mean, you and Eric both sang
Oh,
the
we're big
praises
fans
of
of
wool.
wool.
Yeah. For years and years before. And I was always like, wool. And then I bought two wool shirts last year prior to Mountain Mist that we all did together. And both of them are staples in my winter running now. I wear them a lot. And oftentimes I'll wear just the wool shirt and a light jacket or something like that, even if it's 30 degrees. And so you were both right about that. Maybe you're right about this too.
Probably. We're usually right.
So you're usually right. You weren't right about the vest, but you're usually right.
Okay. First of all, I haven't seen it on you. I don't know that it doesn't work. It could just be user error. It could also
it could
be,
be
that you learned about another vest that you just like the configuration of it better, even though
it
you
could
also
be that
haven't
as well.
Tried that.
All right. Could be that as well. The vest conversation is to be continued, because that's not something I've quite worked out yet, but it is something that I'm working on.
Yeah.
I wore my, we were required in the Cove 50K to bring some sort of vest or some sort of hydration. It was a cup free race. And so I wore the Orange Mud single barrel quiver that I've worn for several runs before, and it worked pretty well. It worked just fine. But I mean, you have aid stations, right? And so that was good. You will appreciate, with about an hour left to go in the race, I stop at this one big aid station. At this point, I had taken all the gels that I had brought with me. And I had been drinking water, of course, throughout. And I drank the water down to about, there was maybe 3-4 ounces in the bottom of the bottle. And I run up to the aid station and they're like, "What do you want?" And I said, "Mountain Dew." And so they start pouring Mountain Dew into the bottle, and he pours in like a few ounces. He goes, "Is that good?" I said, "No, keep going, keep going, keep going." And eventually he put about 15 ounces worth of Mountain Dew in the bottle.
Oh,
I didn't get
man.
him to fill it up quite all the way, because I knew it would spew if I did that. But he's filling up. He goes, "My man, you do the do." And I said, "Last hour of the race, dude. Time to get freaky." And threw it on my back and ran off. And that's how I fuel for the last hour of the race.
Did you choose Mountain Dew over Coke or Pepsi?
I did.
Why?
Because Mountain Dew is not something I ever remotely taste in my real life.
Fascinating.
And the fruity, yummy, yellow flavor of Mountain Dew, with the elevated caffeine content that Mountain Dew has over Coca-Cola and Pepsi and RC and Dr. Pepper and whatever else they had there, is that was part of my choice.
Wow. Yeah. I'm very impressed that you ran the last part of that course as strong as you did, fueled by Mountain Dew.
So absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, I am fortunate. So some people have very sensitive systems. I pay a lot of attention to what I fuel and what I use as fuel, but I do it from a performance point of view. I am fortunate that my system is not super sensitive. Like I don't know that I've ever, knock on wood, I don't know that I've ever like tried a gel or something else like that that just flat did not work for me. I have preferences, and I certainly want to choose the nutrition strategy that actually will lead to the best performance, right? So I'm not going to eat like, you know, a meatball sub in the middle of an ultra marathon, right?
Right.
But I can, you know, opt for the simple sugar of a Mountain Dew and drink that over the course of the last hour of the race and expect that I'll still be able to perform.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Works for you.
Yeah, works for me indeed. Works for me indeed. One more thing I do want to say before we talk about the 10, that brilliant race that they had just a couple of weeks ago that we promised that we would talk about on our last podcast. And that's to mention our next podcast, which will be a conversation with Doug Olson. Doug, we gave a shout out to last Friday when we were recording because he was going into the Mount Mitchell Heartbreaker 50-mile race over the weekend. He did that last Saturday and he did fabulously well. I am psyched for Doug. I'm proud of the work that he put in preparation. I am proud of the performance and the execution he had on race day. And so I invited him to come onto the podcast next week to talk to us about his preparation, about the race itself, about his recovery, and of course, about what's next. And so super excited to have Doug. And so if you've ever wanted to do a 50 miler or a super hilly, rigorous, tough 50 miler or the Mount Mitchell Heartbreaker itself, by all means, tune in and hear what Doug has to say about his experience last week with what was his first ever 50 mile race.
It's pretty cool.
So pretty cool indeed.
The elevation profile of that was just like shocking to me, honestly. I mean, what did I say? What were there 2 miles where you climbed like over 2,000 feet or something?
That was on the first climb.
and George, don't you want to run the Mount Mitchell 50K next year? Marathon / 50K?
I want to do the Mount Mitchell Challenge next year.
Challenge. Okay.
So is the Black Mountain Marathon and Mount Mitchell Challenge. And so it's a marathon that goes up to the halfway point, but then, and then you have to turn around and go back down. It's like the Pikes Peak Marathon, but they have a challenge where you get to the half marathon point, and rather than turn around and going straight back, you actually continue and go to the top of Mount Mitchell.
Is it the same course that he ran, or is it totally different?
I don't think so. It's not the same course that he ran,
okay.
But I don't know that it's totally different. Okay. There's probably some places where it overlays. We'll have to talk to him about that when we talk to him next week, right?
Yeah, as long as it's not the exact same course that he ran or that 2 mile section, I'm game.
You just don't want that 2,000 feet and 2 mile section. Fair.
Absolutely not. Like no chance. I don't even want to backpack that section, let alone run it.
So I was reading a race report. Okay, because everything's about comrades for me right now. I was reading a race report from comrades this week. That was where the person actually posted their Strava data, a screenshot of their Strava data. And in mile 49 of the year they did it, and it's slightly different. And it was an up run, just like mine's gonna be an up run. But in mile 49, it goes up 180 feet. And then in mile 50,
feels impossible.
So in mile 50, it goes down like 160 feet. And then in mile 51, it goes up close to 300 feet.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
That's one
I mean,
of
by
the
the time you run that many miles, that's going to be really
right.
painful.
That's one of the named hills. So it's the last named hill. It's called Polly Shorts.
Polly Shorts.
I read a funny article about the Comrades Marathon by Andy Burfoot, where he joked about the fact that it was named Polly Shorts. And he's like, most of the hills that I've run up in my life are called things like Heartbreak and Dead Man's Climb and stuff like that. And he goes, so I wasn't really intimidated by one called Polly Shorts, but I should have been because I walked the whole thing.
Okay, not to like too much comrades, but what's the most surprising thing that you've learned just in all of your the race reports and everything you're looking at now that even though this has sort of been like a bucket list thing for you, you
Yeah.
weren't aware of?
Good question. I read a real the one that I was just talking about was a really extensive race report, and it was from an uprun, which is good because this is the first time they've had an uprun since 2019. So if you read one just from the last few years, it's going to be a little bit different because they're all downruns. But this was from an uprun in 2015. And I really appreciated it. I think one of the most important things I learned from this race report that I just read, and this is one of those things that it totally makes sense, but I hadn't really thought about it, is that the first three named hills, so there's five named hills, right?
Okay.
The first three named hills, he said when you were running them, because the first 37 kilometers is all uphill anyway. He said, I wouldn't have even known I was on a named hill had it not been for the sign telling me that I was on a named hill.
Oh, wow.
I would have just thought I was still going up. And he said, there's one of them called Fields Hill. He said, like, they're like, you're at the top of Fields Hill, and you literally like just keep on running up. Like, there's no downhill, there's no coming down the other side of Fields Hill. Like, it's like this one section of a much longer climb.
That's pretty crazy. I
Yeah.
don't know if that's something to look
So,
forward to or if that's something to terrify
right.
you.
Right. But I mean, like Polly Shorts, the one I was just talking about, that's the last of the named hills that comes pretty late in the race. Like that one, like you run down, you run, like you're going up a particular hill and you crest the hill and you go down the backside and things like that.
Right.
But at least two of the first three hills, there's really no coming down the back side. You're just climbing, and then it's like, oh, now you're on the named hill section, and then you just kind of continue
Keep
climbing on.
climbing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
It is pretty crazy. So, but that's what I expected. I in my head, I'm thinking, all right, get to the top of the fourth named hill, which is called Inchanga. Get to the top of the fourth named hill, and after that, it's not all downhill from there, obviously not, right? It rolls from there.
It's
But
not.
yeah. And that's around 51K or something like that into the race. Like get to that, and after that you can kind of let off the brake a little bit.
Yeah.
The goal is to try and get to that very much within myself. And so we'll see. But
It's
yeah, I'm
very
excited.
exciting.
I just said it was 51K into the race. The reason why I actually clarified that is because the mile markers in Comrades count down rather than counting up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're not mile markers, they're kilometer
They're
markers.
kilometer markers. I know,
Yeah,
I was
and
going to say.
so I'll literally start the race, I'll run across the starting line, I'll run almost a kilometer, and then I'll get to the sign that says 85 kilometers to go, then 84 kilometers to go, then a few minutes later, 83 kilometers to go. Right?
That's a lot of, yeah.
That's a lot of counting down.
I hope I don't have that when I go run 100K. I don't actually
So
want to know how many K I've run.
no, and that's part of kind of getting into flow is sort of letting go and not paying close attention to precisely where you are in the race, right? And focusing
Yeah.
on exactly like what's happening inside of your body in this step, right?
Sure.
And so that's a mental challenge I've already started to envision, is not letting those gigantic numbers counting down get into my head.
Got it.
No.
Well, we could talk about running 26 laps on a track. Can
Good
we talk about the
segue.
opposite of comrades?
So good segue. It's 25 laps on a track, but I'm with it. I'm with it. So the 10, a special 10,000 meter outdoor race that was conducted a couple weeks ago, turned out to be one of the greatest 10,000 meter races ever run on American soil, if not the greatest, as a matter of fact.
I was going to say, I think it's the greatest.
Tell us about the setup for the race, Michelle.
Notoriously, the Olympic standard for the 10,000 meters is pretty difficult to find a race to chase it at or qualify at. And this is really just an event. I think it started a few years ago. It's put on in the United States. And, the Stanford invite, I think, used to be where most people went to chase the 10K standard, either for USAs or Worlds or Olympics. But that race is actually this weekend also, but I think I'm correct in that they did away with the 10,000 meters. So we needed somebody else to kind of come onto the scene and give professional athletes a place to chase times, really. So it is really just like a, I don't want to say it's a time trial situation, but it is, right?
It
They're
is.
out there and they're setting specific standards for the men and the women. Historically, it's great time of year, great weather, and I think this year's conditions were absolutely ideal. So, a lot of Americans, but a lot of international athletes also came over. The only other opportunity, well, I could be incorrect, but I think if any other Americans want to chase a time, they're going to have to go to Europe. Probably one of these night races that are also put on for people to chase times. But I think this is really the last opportunity on US soil. Could be mistaken about that, but it's definitely the biggest. At least this time of year. So, yeah, we saw fantastic races just
And they
across the board.
situate it at a time of year where people have the fitness coming out of indoor track, like indoor track world or indoor track NCAAs and that sort of thing. And haven't quite taken the break after indoor track and rebuilding towards their peak. And so you have that fitness from indoor track. You extend your season one more week, you run the 10, and then you kind of take your break. And so that's very much what all the people basically that we saw running did. And so people are actually, strangely enough, here in March, are really
Super
fit.
fit.
Because they haven't actually begun their outdoor build yet. they're still kind of on that peak from indoor. And so that's kind of what we saw. But yeah, they had the wave light system going, and the wave light systems are tuned to those Olympic standards. The Olympic standard for men is 27 flat,
That's
which
crazy.
is such an aggressive standard. I mean, I remember really well, and I was in high school, which was a long time ago, but not that long ago. Might have been in college, but high school, early college, when a human being ran under 27 flat for the first time.
Well, now we have eight in the same race.
Now we have eight in the same race, and you have to run under 27 flat if you even want to be able to compete in the Olympic Games. And so yeah, there's, I think they said, one of the articles I read that said that 78 men total in human history have run under 27 minutes. What's the Olympic standard for women? I know it's similarly aggressive.
Yeah, we're got to go 30, 40 or faster now for the women to run in Paris. So
Again, super aggressive times that you have to be able to hit in order to run. And so yeah, they actually had two sets of lights for the women. One set at 30 40, and then another one set for 30 flat. Since Alicia Monson had run 30:03 at this race last year, and they figured they might be able to get some women under 30 minutes, which even that's incredible that that's what women are running now. I mean, just amazing, right? But yeah, like you said, perfect weather. Men ran, eight men ran under the Olympic standard of 27 flat. Grant Fisher won the race, but said pretty much as soon as he crossed the finish line that the goal was not to win. The goal was to run under 27 flat and get the standard and just kind of check that off the list before he takes a break and starts his build towards all the big summer races. He said something to the effect of, "I think anybody in this race would rather finish 15th in the race and run under 27 flat than win and run 27:01." Right? Because it was
I
just all
mean,
about getting under that.
Grant looked like he was jogging. I mean, that's the crazy thing. And we talk about, peaking kind of after indoor season and now taking a break and really coming back and building fitness. And Grant looked like he just kind of hung in there and then on the last lap just kind of made a move and won the damn thing. So I think, more impressive than the time was just his race strategy and his race execution.
That he can run 26:52 and look that relaxed, right?
I mean, he's really a hope. I mean, he's really our, I think he is our best hope for like a global medal.
This year, I agree. But our next best hope for a global medal finished second in the race. And that is, of course, Nico Young, who I've been a fan of Nico Young for years. And my appreciation and fandom for Nico Young has only grown over the course of the past several months here. I like Nico Young for a wide variety of reasons, but not the least of which is that I think he's a super talented runner who, until just a couple of months ago, never had an NCAA title. He had so many near misses, I felt like.
So many, right.
And there's a degree to which I relate to that. I feel like my career is just a story of near misses. but that's also one of the reasons why I've continued, because near misses are actually more motivating for continuing than actually achieving goals. We talked about that on literally one of the very first episodes of this podcast, like episode 2 or something. There's a degree to which obviously he's a far, far superior runner than I ever was, but I sort of sympathized with his near missing. But then, of course, he goes to NCAAs, wins the 5,000 meters and the 3,000 meters in NCAAs, sets a new NCAA record at the 5,000 meters, and then comes out here at the 10 and runs well under 27 minutes. Finishes second, runs 26:52 to shatter the NCAA record of 27:08, becomes the third fastest American at 10,000 meters of all time, behind Grant Fisher and Galen Rupp. What can you even say about that? I mean, that's just amazing.
A few things.
Go for
so
it.
There's a new YouTube channel called like Track All Access, and mm-hmm. they did a bunch of, you know, episodes just with Mike Smith out at NAU watching mm-hmm. some of the workouts that Nico was doing. So I think that it was stupid obvious he's just in the best shape of his life. And I think there was some hesitation after, you know, indoors, like whether he was going to just sit him and rest him for outdoor, or he was going to go and run the 10. And, you know, Mike Smith was basically like, well, let's just see how his body feels and if he's feeling good. But there was almost no chance that Nico wasn't going to show up and run this race.
Right.
So he ran this race. He recently announced an NIL deal with Adidas. I mean, there is some speculation that that's been in place for a long time and that it just now went public because he'll make his pro debut. And although it's not, you know, confirmed, it's pretty likely that this NIL deal with Adidas will carry him into a professional career with Adidas and probably also stay with Mike Smith, because why not, right?
Yeah.
So I think it'll be awesome to watch him, especially as we get into outdoor. And yeah, I would say, you know, coming off those races at NCAA indoors, it's unknown kind of where he would fit in at the trials. But when you go out and run a 10K and 26:52, I mean, it's just, I don't know, like you got to run him.
Yeah.
You have an athlete that's you know, that
it's on that much
talented.
Of a tear.
So I thought that was super fun. And, you know, like he's got brothers that run for Stanford and they're much more public than he is. Those guys
identical
are,
twin brothers. Yeah.
Yeah. Those, well, they cut their hair differently recently. So
did they?
Which I thought was helpful. But yeah, those guys are, they've got NIL deals with On. I mean, it's interesting because Nico's the like far more talented runner, but those guys sort of did everything ahead of him, like social media, NIL deal. But I think Nico's kind of just coming into his own now. So it should be super fun to follow him through the outdoor season.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Super exciting. We should mention, so we've said several times, 8 men ran under 27 minutes. There was one other race where 9 men in the United States where 9 men ran under 27 minutes, but this is the most ever to run under 27 minutes in a single race. There were 3 Americans, Grant Fisher, Nico Young, and then Woody Kincaid also ran under 27 minutes and finished there in that top 8. As of 2021, only 2 Americans had ever run under 27 minutes. And then we had 3 of them in one race just a couple of weeks ago, which is pretty cool. There was a South African record run in that race. There was a Swedish record run in that race. And then it's also worth mentioning that there was a guy named Habtum Samuel, who's from Eritrea, but goes to the University of New Mexico. And so he's an NCAA runner. He finished 5th in 26:53. So 1 second behind Nico Young. And he ran the second fastest time ever in the NCAA. So nobody in the NCAA had ever broken 27 minutes. The NCAA record was from Sam Chalanga, and it was 27:08 from in like 2010 or something like that. and you had two guys break that record by a lot in the same race.
Like we said, it was, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's worth
it's
watching.
Cool. Well, it's also one of those things, you say it's worth watching, but it's also one of those things that it's also so understated, because it's a fairly small crowd.
Well,
it's
yeah.
in a fairly small stadium. There's something about it that also feels very pure, that it's just a bunch of athletes out there, you know, going for this time and running hard. It's kind of fun and pure to watch.
No title on the line, no team on the line, but still probably some of the best 10,000 meter running we've seen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. And then we had a all comers record in the women's race. So fastest race ever run by a woman in the women's race on US soil, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, the big pull to the women's race was Alicia Monson, hoping to kind of better her American record time. Mm-hmm. She was sick. She dropped out about halfway through the race. I thought it was a little bit interesting that they would set the pace and kind of go for this so fast for her, because she was pretty sick at the beginning of this year. And so she had a pretty good indoor season, but I think it was all kind of delayed. So this seemed a bit ambitious, but I felt better. I mean, not this sounds horrible, but when I found out she had like the stomach bug and she spent all night in the bathroom after it, it made me feel a little bit better about my own experience with the stomach bug 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Like if it takes out our fastest runner
no,
in America.
I, that's what I said. Like understanding where pros come from, it actually makes you feel better about some of your own struggles. I've said that. I said that just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So we did have Gebre Selassie finish in, I think, 29:48. And then Wayne Colati, who was just runs for Under Armour Dark Sky. She's on an absolute tear, you know, debuted in the half marathon, broke the American record. She's going to run in Serbia tomorrow, Saturday morning, at World Cross Country Championships. Mm-hmm. And I think she is almost like a surefire, like she's going to be tough to beat on the track for that team for Paris. So she got the Olympic qualifying standard. And then one of her teammates, actually Lauren Ryan, ran just, I don't know, 2 or 3 seconds slower than her and got it. And then Megan Keith,
which
of New Balance.
Lauren Ryan had an Australian record in doing that in 30:35.
So just to, you know, I think the men kind of dominated the night of good running, but also some really talented women out there also. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, we're sitting here talking about how 8 men ran under the Olympic standard. You also had 1, 2, 3, 4 women. So pretty impressive, right?
Yeah.
Including, of course, led by the fastest time ever on American soil and the number 9 best performance in of all time on the women's side. So yeah. Kind of an incredible and very cool thing. I'm glad that the 10 has become a thing, you know.
I love that it's become a thing.
Yeah. I mean, we opened the podcast by talking about how it's Tour of Flanders weekend, and Tour of Flanders has been around for more than 100 years and it's so old and so traditional. And I like races with their history. Paris-Roubaix, which, you know, this super historical bike race is coming up next week. The Boston Marathon is so historical. I mean, I appreciate the history of races, but I kind of like these new things too.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, put on by Sound Running, and they've just done an amazing job over the last few years to put on races, you know, when and where athletes need them. The coverage is amazing. The hype is great. Mm-hmm. And I think this is sort of just a brief glimpse of like outdoor season, you know, and we're in an Olympic year is right around the corner. So we're not there yet. Most athletes probably shut down for a little bit or resetting and kind of going back into an outdoor base phase. But this is so exciting for what's to come this summer.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. Great things ahead indeed. Michelle, I appreciate your talking about all the great things from a couple of weeks ago. And we will definitely be discussing all those great races this summer when they happen.
Yep. I'm super excited about the outdoor track season to come. And of course, the cycling also. I'm very excited about the Tour de Flanders. So won't be having any of that Flemish gel, but Justin Schmidt, if you try it, let us know how it tastes.
For sure. For sure. Thanks, Michelle.
Talk to you later.
Thanks again for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast. Don't forget to check out our new website that we're building in early 2024, mostpleasantexhaustion.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pleasantpodcast or on Instagram at mostpleasantexhaustion. We're available on SoundCloud, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell your friends and don't forget to give us a rating. We also offer coaching services through MPE Coaching. You can reach out to us at pleasantpodcast@gmail.com, at mpecoach@gmail.com, or just click on the coaching link on the podcast website. Again, that's www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, Blue Pineapple Travel. You can find them at bluepineappletravel.com, at facebook.com/bluepineappletravel, or on Instagram at bluepineappletravel. Check out High Echelon PC at highecheloncpa.com. Big thanks to our sponsor, Elemental Altitude. You can find them at elementalaltitude.com, on Instagram at elementalaltitude, or on Facebook at facebook.com/elementalaltitude. And finally, thanks to our newest sponsor, Bright Hair. You can find them at brighthair.com or on Instagram at bright.hair. On behalf of Michelle Frank and Eric Hall, thanks for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast.